Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, hope it's starting tonight. Sounds funny. Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Matt Weber. The future is now down a whole 2. NASDAQ down 32. Kevin, driving outside is frightful this morning.
Yeah, it's. I'm not expecting it to be any better than any of the last couple of days, just because now we're getting a little layer of slippery on top instead of just frozen so damn solid that it doesn't matter whether it's ice or snow.
Well, your buddies on the 8094 West have had early traffic report. There's every jackknife Chevy in the world is all over the place, and that thing's it's closed in Indianapolis, isn't it, Mitty? And then the South Shore's still closed, so everybody's driving. So it's not exactly the ideal morning coming from Indiana place, as we used to say. Yeah, the South Shore's closed, the Metro Electric's still closed, they've got some freight train derailment right in the middle of frozen wire, so it's about as bad as it gets. This is a day, of course, everybody wants to come back to work because the weather is at least somewhat normal. So there.
Yeah, and everybody's going to think they can drive normally now.
Yeah. Well, that's that's why you buy the SUV, Kevin. Everybody knows that. The Amazon was up $50 after they came out with earnings, and during the call. The thing drops 5% then. So it's down about 100 and something dollars from its high last night. It's unbelievable. Anyway, you gotta be careful in this stock. It was, I was mentioning to Maddie that, they had a couple of, new accounts that had a lot of these Amazon calls from a couple of months ago. And, God, they were absolutely flat on her behind. And yesterday the stock made a huge run up and it had a big volatility surge because of the earnings last night, and they got up to somewhere near where people paid for them, and I said, let's just get out of these things. Good Lord. I mean, the straddle was $100, Kevin. Alright, I think I know, you know what a straddle is. The call and the put. The combination of the call and the puts. In other words, if a stock is trading $1,800 and the 1,800 call and the 1,800 put combined, that's called the straddle. How much? So the
combined, not net, right?
Combined, and so what that's telling you is if the call and the put together is say $100, it was like 98 last night. That's saying that the market, let's say estimate of stock movement is like $100, which is a lot. I mean, it's a real lot. It's like 6%, for God's sake. And, those kinds of calls were valued at. So, you know, obviously the bad news is if you sold the darn things and the thing went up $150, you'd have been sorry you sold them. But just say I was willing to take that chance. Something I didn't buy in the first place. So,
hey, you're just a rambler and a gambler, huh?
Well, I mean, I've been mentioning to people that most of the time, you know, and I don't have any hard, but I'm pretty good at observation and calculations. If you had $90 bazillion and earnings season came in and you took the top 100 stocks, if you just were to sell the straddle and say it's not going to move that much. Now, first of all, if you agree with the efficient markets theory, okay, we're going to get theoretical here early in the morning on a Friday. If you were to
always excites the listeners.
But if you were to buy or to sell the straddle over a long period of time, you would say that you should do the same on both sides. In other words, I'm not talking about one or two times. Because if you were to say the sellers always win or the buyers always win, the conclusion there would be that the options are priced not correctly, right? So ideally, and I'm going to say that there's a little bit of a skew to the pricing. And the reason why that is because anybody who has the money can buy the straddle. Okay, if I have $100, I can buy that would be 100 times 100, so it'd be $10,000 to buy a one lot. Okay, but I can do that. Anybody with $10,000 can do that. You can't really sell a one lot because the margin is going to be higher than $10,000. So it should be skewed a little bit towards the sellers should make money a little more than the buyers if you did it 1,000 times. Okay, so most, I'm going to say, in my opinion, again, not having, if you were to take the top 100 stocks and you were to sell the straddles, every earnings thing, you probably would end up a little bit ahead. You'd have some that you basically got your behind kicked on, and there's going to be others that opened up right at the strike, and you go, oh, there's a quick 100. But the last couple, maybe even the last three, but this one kind of for sure, I just have this feeling that if you'd have been long at every single one, you'd be ahead. Stuff is moving. We've done a few of them, and to be honest with you, we only pay like, we do the calendar spread, so, you know, we're paying a nickel or a dime or something. So we're paying very little. The idea being, you know, if we win one out of six, where we're selling it for $1, we're ahead. We have come close. I mean, we did the IBM, and I think it's $15 away from our strike. I mean, we did a couple others. You know, it's only, there's no such thing as only, especially when it's customer money, but it's, you know, it's $1,000. That's the size of the, because I'm looking to buy, like, literally to buy something with a nickel or dime and sell it for $2, which doesn't happen very often. But this particular, every one of these things is moving, Kevin. I mean, I'm going to say this particular earnings thing, if you'd have been along the straddle every single time, you're way ahead, which to me is very unusual. You know, it doesn't mean the next time that you want to be a buyer, doesn't mean today you want to be a buyer. It just means my observation so far is that the stuff is really jumping, and Amazon is certainly an example of that. But you know, when you start talking about all the different things, and you know, Apple becoming a service company, God, Kevin, can there be that much service in the world to do to make up for the amount of $1,000 iPhones when they're doing a million of them a pop? I mean, there can't be. I mean, I know they're pretty good at their service, but
oh, their tech service?
Yeah,
sure. There's a lot of service because as the prices come down, it's going to become, it's going to become the methodology. And Amazon is pretty innovative in it. It's not just, you know, they are so far beyond just offering basic cloud services where you spin up a server on demand. They do that too. And that's going to be the core of the business for the foreseeable future. But they actually have services now where you can just go cause a transaction to happen. You don't even have to define a server, a computer, or anything else. It's just event driven, and basically a transaction will launch at the right time that you need to do it. So with that, and then as blockchain expands as a inventory management methodology, that whole database tracking, big data application is going to take hold. So, yeah, Amazon there's a lot of room for it to grow.
Well, actually, I'm going to cross you. I meant Apple. Is there any chance that their services could even replace, you know, 1/10 of their iPhone sales? It just seems like the numbers are so. And on one hand, you're the guy that I quote both ways. You talk about how this area has a lot of room to grow. But you also say that there's a lot of people in it, and it's pretty competitive. It's not a 65% margin like a cell phone or something. I mean, at least it might not be as the prices come down.
No, but where Amazon has the advantage, and I don't know where Apple shakes out in this. I don't even think of them as a player in the market.
They want you to.
When that time comes.
They want you to.
I know they do, but. They've dabbled in things like Apple Cars and Apple TV and all of that kind of stuff too. The innovative brain behind the company was Steve Jobs, and he's gone, and I don't know that they're getting as many wins as they used to.
Well, I mean, we're talking about massive wins, and you know, which is, there's people, if you listen to the Talking Heads. you know, they, if you go by the Apple Store, I mean, it's still Map. They still have their crowd. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, just the question is, how much can you expand, and does the, you know, does the, you know, do you going to get a new phone every two? What was in their? I'm going to say in their heyday. Boy, I'm making a judgment call there. When these things first came out, Kevin, what was the? Maybe Maddie, you can opine as well. What was the every 2 years your AT&T or Verizon would get you a new one if you signed a new contract, or was it 3 years?
Yeah, typically, yeah, and you could even get one sooner if you just wanted to rip up the old one and recommit to a new term.
Okay, so
But typically, yeah, it was like every 2 years you were eligible for an upgrade. That's what they would inform you, that you were eligible now.
So has that become more extended?
No, it's gone the other way, where most people are moving towards monthlies.
No, I'm talking about where you get a new phone less often than you used to.
Don't know.
Maddie, what do you think? I mean, do they last longer? I don't like it.
Well, Apple purposely shuts their phones down after a period of time, we learned last year. So I don't know that they last longer. They're certainly capable of lasting longer.
Well, if you're a phone, I was going to say a phone knucklehead. If you're a guy like our buddy Dr. J, who's not a knucklehead, who's Mr. Phone.
I mean, well, I was going to say he would prefer you call him Mr. Knucklehead. If you're
Knucklehead. I wouldn't call him a knucklehead. Love Jan. Matter of fact, going over to his place for Super Bowl, so he's having his usual party. His at the end of a year or two, I don't know if it was a year or two, he told me his is just plain flat worn out. Because he's using it like every minute. He's awake. I mean, do you eventually wear the thing out in a screen and so forth where it just, you just beat the hell out of it? I mean, that's something I have in mind, but.
You can.
You can, but, you know, I tend to make things last longer, and then you can take my daughter, who is the person who is harder on consumer electronics than anyone I have ever seen. So I've seen her go through like three laptops in the time I go through one.
So she's a spider. She like wings the phone at it or something.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yep.
That would tend to.
I have a tendency to crack my phone screen over a period of time, and you can deal with that for a while. But then after a while, it kind of spreads, just like the windshield, and it gets annoying. And then you know it's time for a new phone. To replace the screen itself is basically pointless. You might as well just get a new phone.
That I would probably agree with. So why don't you get one of the tougher phones like mine?
I don't know what that means, but my problem is I don't
put the Gorilla screen.
I don't put the big bulky case on it, which I probably should, but I hate that in my pocket, so I don't. And then inevitably, 6 months down the road, I drop it, and it starts a small crack, and then it spreads.
I was going to buy this Caterpillar phone. Of course, the thing's $800, and I don't. Most of the reviews have it's not the world's greatest phone. But you know what the thing has in it, Kevin, which is I think is incredibly unique and we could have all used. Matter of fact, I could have rented myself out probably. It has an IR, infrared camera in it for construction site work. And I'll bet everybody over the last 2 days, even though you probably wouldn't want to put your duds out and gone outside, everybody should have gone outside of their house or apartment building or an infrared thing in the last couple of days and taken infrared shots on their house and seen where they were losing heat. I mean, it would have been an education to everybody. And if you got a draft in the basement, you don't know where it's coming from. I bet that thing would have been like a beacon the other day. You just see heat coming out of some crack someplace you never even knew was there.
Yeah, well, I already know where I'm losing heat. Pretty much everywhere.
Well, that's there you go. But
on the other hand, it's a little house doesn't cost that much to heat. So,
well, you can always put like a little what do you call those? The stoves that you put the one log in there, and a log lasts like 12 hours, the ones that are all the Swedish ones?
Well, actually, I do have a fireplace in the kitchen area, which was, when the house was originally built, was like the room, the only room. But I covered it over because I had roof leaks there, and about the only option I have, and I may still do this, is to get a gas insert and put that in there, because you don't have to vent that up. You can vent that any direction you want.
Yeah, the new ones you can, for sure. Yeah, but those, Audrey had one of those in her house in Ogden Dunes. And, well, I don't know if she had the Swedish one, but man, these things are unbelievable. You put like one or two logs in there, and the whole thing heats up, and it lasts like a day, doesn't it, Kevin? I mean, it's like the whole thing is I mean, it's an amazingly efficient. Because they allow like very little air in there. So you're not taking much air anyway. They're pretty interesting. Dr. J's got a fireplace down at his place in Indiana where, I don't know where the hell he got the thing. It was some floor. Of course, it was a floor item, and he somehow got three men and a dog to go take it out of the guy's place and have it installed. But it actually takes air from underneath, having like cold air from the floor, and runs it behind the fireplace and out the top. It's like a convection. Pretty neat.
Interesting.
You can do the same thing with a fireplace. I mean, if you had hot water heat, you just run the pipes over the top of the fireplace, right, and pick up more heat. There's a lot of stuff you can do. Very interesting. One of the things, but not to diverge a little bit, back in the late 70s, there was a real big movement toward something called passive solar. And I don't even know anybody who even knows that term anymore. You know what that is, Benny?
Do I know what is?
Passive solar designs on homes.
Passive solar designs?
Yeah.
I mean, I can probably figure that out, yes.
Well, but active solar means you have something that's actually turning the sunlight into electricity, correct? That's active. Passive means that your house is aligned on the lot, usually east and west. So you have the southern, all your windows face south, pretty much. And now, when the sun comes up, you have eaves on all the windows, or shutters, or mostly eaves, at the exact degree you need for your, wherever you are on the earth. In other words, in Chicago, the eaves would be, let's say, 18 inches, or something like that, or 22 inches, where in the wintertime, with the sun low in the sky, comes in all the windows. In the summertime, when it's higher in the sky, none of it, you have shade everywhere. So the idea inside, you'll have inside of these windows, on the floor you'll have concrete or tile or something like that. And when the sun hits it, it'll actually pick up heat during the day from the sun, even if it's 5 below outside. And that will heat up. The best is if you have something called a trombe wall inside where it hits a wall, and the wall might be black. It's just concrete. But if it's, you know, it's part of the architecture, it looks okay. And all night long, that thing will give you heat because it's absorbed it during the day. In the summertime, the sun's up higher, and they don't get any sun. And it's pretty interesting. It can get very, you can run a small film of water over that black, essentially stone, during the day and heat the whole home with it. And you don't have anything running. I mean, it's just all, it's all convection. But this totally, you don't know anybody. I don't even hear the terms anymore. It's totally an architectural thing that's gone. They have schools built like that in Britain and everything, and now the term, I haven't heard it in 30 years, and it's pretty interesting. And I don't know, Kevin, if you ever saw or heard anything like that.
This would have been a darn helpful conversation to have last week.
Well, it's pretty hard to build an inside wall in your house in 4 days. Just saying.
Okay, last month then.
Yeah, last month. I'm just saying. But the whole idea being that big hunks of mass, concrete or stone, absorb all kinds of energy. And with the heat put on, and they do it very slowly. So it'll take essentially 8 hours to heat the thing up, and it takes 8 hours for it to cool down as it's pouring the heat back into your home. Anyway, more than we need to know. All right, Kevin, we have all kinds. We've now, this China deal is front and center all over the place. Obviously, we're moving markets with it, which is terrific, because with a lot of the new accounts I've taken in the last few weeks, a lot of these people are as long as it can get. And they've had a nice 2 weeks, so that's terrific.
They've actually had a great January, best in like three years or something like that.
So a lot of people that were, you know, really down on their luck because they saw a huge, horrible last quarter made, you know, a substantial amount of that money back in a lot of areas, which is a good thing. You don't see anybody lose money. But now the question is, now it's back up here, are we thinking that the next 8 years we can just constantly have, I'll say, a Fed and people in office that are very concerned about, I don't know, Kevin, when did it become more important to have asset prices? Not that it isn't. I don't want anybody losing a dime. When did it become more important for people to have asset prices up and jobs and payroll advances or just lip service? We really don't care about that. We really care about the market and the people that have the assets going up. The economy is really, or shall we say the population has really been split along those lines. And I don't know that it's bad. I don't know that you should try and fix it. It's just different than 30 years ago, I think, 40 years ago.
Well, I'm pretty sure that if we just if we just tax rich people more, we'll probably fix it.
Well, again, I've been chewing over that one. We'll come back from break. Let's talk about that a little bit. I don't know the idea about taxing rich people is necessarily a good idea, but I'm going to say that there was some social reason for having a the death tax, what's the name for that? Oops, it's cold this morning.
Yeah,
I get it. Should I tweet out the Mike Braun video? No, I shouldn't do that right now because we want people to listen to the commercials.
Yeah. anyway, we have the S&P futures are still down $2, $2.75. But no, there's social reasons for this, and I'm clearly not on the Elizabeth Warren side, but I don't know that I want to be like in Britain either, where some guy managed to be whatever he was in the Dark Ages and got a castle and got lands, and his kids never worked a day in their life, or grandkids or their grandkids, and they still were, they still told everybody else what to do 100-500 years later. I'm not so sure I want. The reason for the estate tax is because people that came over here didn't want that model.
I'm willing to bet that there's some place in the middle we could probably find.
I would say that's probably true. SP Futures, again, Dow Futures up 10. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. The Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar.
To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Socks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board, Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us. It's hard to even imagine when you come outside and it's 5 degrees that it's 25 degrees warmer than the day before. Isn't it, Manny?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's 25 warmer than anything, but...
It was very cold out there this morning, but, yeah, nothing like Wednesday and Thursday.
You didn't feel like you had to have every single square inch of skin covered this morning, though, like you did yesterday.
Right.
Actually, Wednesday morning was the worst, coming in with that wind, I think.
I thought yesterday was just as bad as Wednesday.
Well, maybe... That's probably very true. SP futures down 2, Dow futures up 13, NASDAQ futures down 29. Most of that's because of Amazon being down. We have oil down a whole 4 cents, and we have the 10-year yield 2.62 as the Fed has got us back, and it is way under 3. But we're now over 3. I thought we'd never look back, and I guess wrong again. DAX down 21.2%. FTSE up 8. Call that flat. CAC around down 2. Call that flat. So we've got a slower in Europe today. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei 14, call that flat. Shanghai up 36, that's 1.3%. Hang Seng down 11, call that one flat. We've got a slow one here today so far. Again, oil down 5 cents, Brent up 2 cents. So not much going on there. Natural gas unchanged. RBOB unchanged. The home heating oil down a penny, so let's call that one unchanged. Gold up 80 cents, 1326. Silver actually down 6 cents as these guys are flat today. They've been rallying like every single day for almost a whole month, but today a pause. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. As Chief mentioned earlier, it's treacherous conditions in northwest Indiana, especially on the 8094 expressway. We've had multiple jackknife semi-trailers this morning on the Indiana side. Those are clear. Now we have a new crash that has the eastbound 8094 between Calumet Avenue and Indianapolis Boulevard completely closed. It's backed up all the way to the Bishop Ford I-94 due to that closure. So avoid 8094 if at all possible this morning, as there appears to be all kinds of ice and issues with driving on that interstate right now. Especially just over the border on the Indiana side. Multiple crashes to report. Illinois side, we're looking okay on 80 on the Illinois side. No issues to report. We do have a crash near Joliet, so I guess we do have an issue on the westbound I-80 right near Joliet. But nearer the Indiana border, you'll run into some traffic, but no accidents on the Illinois side. Dan Ryan, inbound at 87th Street, there's a crash. No issues on I-57 or the Bishop Ford at this hour. On the Stevenson northbound just before Route 53, there's an accident blocking the left lane, and that's causing issues on I-55. Tri-State northbound before the Reagan Memorial, which is I-88, there's an accident blocking the 3 left lanes. This just came across, so a big concern on the Tri-State I-294 just before you're getting on to I-88 in the western suburbs, and that's causing major headaches for folks coming in from the Tri-State and from I-88. And now on the Kennedy inbound just before Austin, there is a crash. So take the train, for God's sake. all kinds of issues.
I'd turn
right
back
now.
If I were you.
And now this just came across, Chief, on the Jane Addams Tollway outbound. We have an accident blocking the two left lanes out past O'Hare on I-90. So expect delays on the outbound side heading out toward the northwest suburbs on the Jane Addams. No other issues to report on the area expressways, but all kinds of cold weather and snow concerns, as we did get another inch or two overnight that are apparently is really affecting driving out there, so be careful. Weather today, it's partly cloudy with a high of 19, wind chills in the low single digits. That would normally be very cold, but compared to the last few days, it actually doesn't sound that bad. Right now, it's cloudy and 9 degrees downtown with a wind chill of negative 7. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 72. Right now, it's overcast and 55. In sports, not a lot of action last night. Bulls were off, Suns were off, Blackhawks were off, Coyotes were off. None of our local college hoops teams in Illinois or Notre Dame were in action last night. There was a big game in Arizona, though, college basketball-wise, and it was the Arizona State Sun Devils beating the big brother Arizona Wildcats 95-88.
Cheap. Arizona usually has the better team, right?
Yes. This year they're having a down year. They lost the number one overall pick. He was a one and done last year, DeAndre Ayton. They lost a couple other guys, and so they're kind of in rebuild mode, which is rare for them. They're still, you know, solid. They're 14-8, and potentially could work their way into a bubble situation, but right now they would miss the tournament. Whereas Arizona State is 15-6 and 6-3 in the Pac-12 and in a pretty good spot right now.
Kevin, you mentioned before the break, and we've been kind of talking about it this week.
Before you jump off of that, too, it's also possible that Arizona got its wings clipped a little bit on recruiting one-and-dones based on what we learned from the FBI investigation.
Absolutely.
How come I wasn't a one-and-done? Do you have to be good to be the one?
I don't know. We have friends that tried really hard to be one-and-done.
Yeah, that's the truth. Actually, we had one friend that he had one good year. Thank God, because he worked off that GPA for the next 3 years and barely made it.
Yeah, I know that we have one or two that didn't make it.
Yeah,
and had to sit out a year and come back as serious.
And went on to be like PhDs and stuff, which is interesting. Yeah, we had a guy, Betty, who got like a 3.75 his freshman year. It's on a 4-point scale. And he graduated only because he had an extra course somewhere. Only because one guy forgot to turn in his F because he never saw him. He thought he withdrew for the class. In fact, he just never showed. So if he'd give him the F, he wouldn't have graduated. He was on pins and needles. God, if that guy turns in a grade, I'm screwed. Anyway.
Yeah, the computers don't let you get away with as much of that stuff anymore.
No, it was... Then he had another class that he ended up did get an F in because he went to like two classes and then he missed all the rest. And then he finds out that he had missed the midterm. It's like, oh, bleep, I missed the midterm. So he goes to the guy and pleads his case. And the guy says, okay, I'll give you the midterm like tomorrow. Well, he had been to a few classes, so he was a bright guy. So then he, of course, finds the test from like another guy. And the guy gives him the same test, so he does real well on it. So you think after this, you would at least show up for the rest of the classes and not insult the guy who just helped you. He doesn't go to any of the rest of the classes. And so then at the end, he goes, how about giving me the same deal for the final? Well, by now, the guy's figured it out, and he changes the final. He walks in, he hadn't been to any of the classes, looks at the test, knows I don't know anything on here, writes, he's there for about 30 seconds, writes, thanks for the chance on the top, and drops it on the guy's desk and walks out. Anyway, good friend, yeah. Somewhat of a character. There's a...
That's so great.
It was classic. There's a tone change, Kevin, and I know... depending on where you are, you know, this is weird because I kind of try and look into everybody's mind and see what they're thinking. I know you do too. There's a change that's come up in this world that I've talked about in this country for the last 35 years, and it has to do with a lot of access in industries. It has to do with some of the ways that wealth has changed. And one of the things that I talk about, I try and keep it to a dull roar because people really don't give a rat's ass what happened 40 years ago. But you sort of need to, because when you look at what happened with the Resolution Trust, then you look at what happened with all these mortgages and stuff in 2008. It's sort of the same thing. You're taking people's stuff and you're giving it to other people. And the process is not inclusionary. It's not designed where in 1981, if you and I and Maddie somehow ran out and raised up, how's that for a term, accumulated $1 million. We could no more get in that room than the man in the moon to say, I can take a couple of these properties. It became very, very exclusionary. I've watched that happen in my business. I know literally hundreds and hundreds of people, and there's thousands there I didn't know, that made a living making markets in securities products. And now like four people do it, and they're buying $122 million houses in London. You know what? That stinks. And I would know more when you talk about taxes. I always want to charge people as little as possible, because I think that the backbone of the country ought to be people like us starting a firm, or at least being able to start a firm. Not everybody wants to start their own firm, and say, if I make money, it's an okay deal, and if I lose money, at least I get to count it towards something, maybe the next one or whatever. This has gone totally the wrong way. And now we have people like, you know, what's her name? ACL, is that her name?
AOC.
AOC.
We tried to make it easy for him.
I can't, I still can't.
AOC.
Or Elizabeth, you know, and I'm no fan really of Elizabeth Warren and all that, but I know they're not dumb people, and they sense a change. Kevin, if you and I decide to get in a home remodeling business, and it's wide open, that we can go in there with our money and we can get in the room and we can get one of the foreclosures or whatever, and you and I decide to work 8 hours a day and head to the bar and it's Miller time, which is fine. The whole world does that. And Maddie Weber and Thomas decide to work till midnight every night, and they do 8 houses this year and we do 5, and now all of a sudden they're, quote, richer than we are. I have no desire to charge them any more than we should pay. If it's 35% or 30% or 25%, whatever lowest you can get it, the thought that you would charge people extra for working harder or having some sort of, that maybe they went to school and learned how to build faster than you and I when you and I were, you know, out at the racetrack, who the hell knows? The fact is, if they get more efficient or they make money and they work harder, they have no business paying more in taxes than you and me. I don't believe. And I strongly believe that. Yet I also know the times they are a-changing. I can't get into market maker business anymore. I can't walk into City Hall and say, you got 58,000 pieces of property on the south side that are all there for taxes. Can I buy a couple of them? Get the hell out of here. Who are you? You know, the big money now is going to things other than, in my mind, I guess if you hire the right attorney and you back the right politician, in some people's minds, that's the same as you and I pounding nails 4 hours longer than the other guy. But not in my mind. That's our government giving things to people in my business, I don't care. As long as I can form a PTI Securities without, you know, not to say you shouldn't have to take your tests and know what you're doing, I get that part. If I can form one without somebody I can tell not wanting me be there, I don't care how much the head of Merrill Lynch makes. The minute I can't get into business, then I care. And I have a feeling that maybe he's not earning the reason why his salary is 10 million instead of 5 is because he's been successful at keeping people like me out. And you know what, Kevin? If that's the case, I'll charge the ass 90%. And I get the feeling.
Yeah, but Tom, I don't think the answer to corruption is to tax it.
I don't either.
And really what you're describing is corruption.
But it's happening all over the place. I mean, let's put it this way. I agree with you.
First of all, the answer is not to tax it, because taxing won't pay for what we need it to.
I agree with you, but somebody as young as this lady, and somebody maybe, I'll take a shot, not in the business world that could articulate it maybe like I just did. I'm going to say like Elizabeth Warren. I don't know the lady. I'm going to say all they look at and said, they see, that guy's got $90 billion. He doesn't look like he ever did anything. other than piling on somebody else's largesse or get this huge deal out of somewhere. Man, 30% isn't enough.
A lot of people trashing the former Starbucks CEO because they don't want the run. So one of the ways they're trashing him is saying, well, we shouldn't be paying any attention to a billionaire. A billionaire's got nothing to add here.
But I'm going to say that...
Geez, he's a self-made man. Yeah. He had nothing
to
start.
He is totally different than the person I'm talking about dropping in at the head of Merck that never knew how to make a drug in his life and now just feels he earns $1 billion because they got 48 patents that he didn't do. It's a whole different program, I think. I mean, this guy actually started his own firm and ran a place forever. You know, and how many stores did those guys build out of nothing? It's a whole different world. I'm with you. But I'm saying, they look around a lot of people and they say, how did that guy make that dough? Well, how did General Electric get as big as they did in General Electric financing? Because they got, what'd they get, Kevin? 40% of everything out of the Resolution Trust? And you and I got Skata? I mean, did they earn that money? By buying stuff at 2 cents on the buck from other people?
Tom, I hear your point. But I don't know, you know, if the topic is tax policy, I don't know how that translates to tax policy.
I don't either.
Any more than how the effectiveness of it translates to tax policy, because you are talking about what I consider a form of corruption, and again, corruption is to be prosecuted, not to be, you know, not to be taxed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, except it's not a law to abuse a patent program. It shouldn't be 17 years anymore. I mean, you're not going to go to jail for that. Why would you? I mean, it's the law. It's an idiot law, but it's
okay. But we're jumping all over the place. We're jumping to from access to patents. And so we can pick any one and we can discuss them. And I think you can come up with a cogent approach, because I'm with you on patents. They should not be that long. I get why we have patent protection, but if you can't recover your costs in 5 years, then I'm wondering if you have a viable product, or make it 7 or make it whatever. I don't think you need 17, certainly not in this day and age. So, yeah, but that, what I'm saying is that's a different subject. That's not the, you know.
No, here's
not a tax policy.
I know I'm jumping all over the place, but in my own squirrely mind, I'm making some sort of sense. And what I'm saying is there's a sense among people that a lot of the people now that are rich didn't exactly earn it. There's a sense there. I don't think it applies to the Starbucks guy at all. And what I'm saying is a lot of the history of it, because one of the classes I took with a teacher, talked about it, is one of the reasons for our essentially death tax is we don't want to be pushed around by somebody in Britain whose great-great-great-grandfather had a scam and made money, and now 15 generations of kids have never had a job. We didn't want to do that in America. I'm saying part of the tax, now whether that's right or wrong.
Yeah, we don't want to create royalty. I get it.
And we're doing it right now. You know, and I think people who feel...
Yeah, you know why? Because rich people will find their way around whatever points you want to make.
Well, this is the first time, though.
It gets down. And see, the reason I brought it up is because I think so many of these proposals are non-serious, because they really don't address the issues. And, you know, rather than debate the merits of them, I think we should mock them instead.
Well, I mean, I'm going to say that I could make the statement, okay? And you know what? And I think I could back it up. I'm going to say that I'm looking at Jeff Bezos' face here. I'm going to say that the guy's worth, pick a number, $40 billion. I'm going to say 50% of that is due to a horrendous Supreme Court decision that allowed the Amazon customers to not pay taxes when other people had to. And so do I think he earned $40 billion? I'm going to say he earned $20 billion. But the other 40 is on the rest of the people in this country. And a lot of people look at that and they say, screw that. Just saying.
Okay, so as we work our way through the laundry list of circumstances, we can probably pick out, you know, some of each and come up with something cogent for them. What I'm saying is, though, that the notion of just doing a wealth tax or taxing, everybody over a certain, extra taxing people over a certain level of income. Because, I'm in favor of a progressive tax system. I don't have a problem with that. Some of the proposals out there, just all they're doing is being punitive without actually helping very much.
I'm with you. What I'm saying, Kevin, is if, and again, I'm taking the other side because, first of all, it's easy to take the other side.
Good when radio, you're, damn it.
Well, no, but I agree with you. But name me one person that you know of, that you even heard of. If you're, one of the people in Congress lobbying this out there, name me one person that you know of that actually is making $5-10 million a year, or is that kind of wealth that got it. I'm going to say the old-fashioned way. I'm going to say the guy from Starbucks is one of them. By the way, I think he did. And by the way, if we thought about it, we probably could name a bunch. But I'm going to say that off the top of your head, the richest people around right now. Currently that are making that kind of dough, I'm going to say are in some sort of restricted industry, some sort of monopoly, some sort of even people that are university professors. Well, guess what? You can't start a new university anymore, can you? Really? And everything has gotten so restrictive that the head of the University of California, who knows what's her name, the short lady's making. Or all those people, Is that a free market? Name me one person that you know of that's making that kind of money in a market you can actually call free. Baseball is another example. $40 million. They've got an antitrust example. Do you think baseball players and those owners would be making that kind of money if there was no antitrust exemption in baseball? Do I have a problem?
Probably not.
Do I have a problem if somebody wants to?
So let's go back and say again, what's the problem? Is the problem the antitrust exemption, or is the problem the tax code?
I'm saying you and I would like to think that the tax policy affects people like us who want to get into business, be an entrepreneur, and you can't screw them. I understand that, but other people look around and say, "Where's the entrepreneur? It's Kevin and Chief and Maddie. They don't look like they're making $10 million." Yeah, I wouldn't mind if those guys. I wouldn't care if PTI Securities made $20 million this year because they did a spectacular job for 10,000 more clients. But guess what? That's not what's happening. The guy from Citadel's making all the dough, right? I mean, I'm saying their view of what's happening is different than yours and mine, and theirs is not all that wrong, is what I'm saying.
Okay, so again, problem, identify the problem, fine. Solve the problem, don't. And they're not addressing the
tell
problem.
Me how we're going to this group of people,
and that's why I say they're non-serious.
Tell me this group of people is going to find a way to make it again possible to do what PTI Securities did in 1991, and that's to form a brokerage firm without everybody in the world coming down on you like a ton of bricks. What are you doing?
Well, we could probably, if we take the second hour, we'll probably come up with a pretty good list of all of the factors that are involved in there and say, okay, we got to address them. Now, how do we address them? In the real world and not in the political world, and there's some barriers to that, and I get that, but in the real world, you would start saying, okay, here's the plan, here's the first thing we're going to go after, and here's the second thing we're going to go after, and you're going to work your way through the list. And it might take you a long time. And if it does, it does. That's, you say so be it. But the, right now, first of all, politically you can't because we keep, because we do have people term limited, and I want people term limited, but, we can't manage to put ourselves on a path that says step by step, and here's where we are, and here's where we're going to be 10 years from now.
Well, next time you're in Chicago,
That's what we really need.
Well, let you and I go down to City Hall. We'll go to the information desk and say, "Where's the room where I can get involved in the auctions of these tax properties?" See what they say.
Okay, so what does that have to do with tax policy, though?
No, what I'm saying is if Sterling Bay is essentially given 62 acres on the river, somehow they got all this stuff. The people there sold out, never dreaming the thing was going to be residential, or else they would have hauled out for a lot more money. All of a sudden, all this happens is the city gets up and leaves because they had a lot of the property. They give them all over to these guys. Would I care if Sterling Bay got taxed 50%, which I think is a ridiculous number? It should be 30. You know what, Kevin? No, I wouldn't. You know, I mean, and I never thought I'd say that because they've got every advantage known to God in the middle of a city. They just got, you know, I won't say given, the 60 acres. Do I think that 30% is enough? I think no. And that, you're right. The solution is to somehow not let that happen. God, Kevin, how many lifetimes did we have to be here before we could start making those kinds of changes?
I don't know, but if we don't start soon, then it's going to be that many more lifetimes.
Well, then we'll be done with ours.
That's always the issue. I hear that complaint all the time. Well, why should we do it? It's sort of like the oil drilling argument that we were having 10 years ago that said, well, it's not going to help the problem right now because it's going to take us five or 10 years to get everything up and running. Well, you know what? If we don't do it this year, it's still going to take us 5-10 years from whenever we start. Turns out we got started on oil drilling, and it put a fair amount of downward pressure on prices, which even though they've jumped up and down a buck, they've been more stable than they were before.
Right. See, Kevin, you remember, was it your mom and your dad told you the story about, Maddie, if you ever heard this one, where the guy buys a tree, and he says, I got to get it in the ground. And the dude says, well, that tree takes 100 years to grow. He says, that's right. That's why I don't have a moment to lose.
Yeah.
You can use it as a reason to wait, or you can use it as a reason to hurry up. And what you're saying, Kevin, it's a reason to hurry up. But you know what? I sense that it's getting, you and I are fighters. Okay? And I fought for 6 years on the board of the CBOE, and every single year that I spent way more time, and I'd be probably a wealthy man today if I didn't. At the end of every year, Kevin, I looked in the mirror and said, despite your best efforts, this is going the wrong way. And you know what? It was me pushing up against the current, and I'd stop it in one spot and it'd get by me somewhere else. There's a relentlessness here that as things get more concentrated, they keep getting more and more. And there's no such thing as a World War II and a GI Bill that's going to save us right now. Not that a war would save anybody. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's people that probably could have predicted this back in 1948. This is exactly where we'd be 60 or 70 years later. I would hope they would have been wrong, but they're right. Now, I don't know what turns this bus around. I mean, every place you see, it seems like the jaws are getting tighter. I mean, I know I'm being, but look at the industries. We have in your industry. I mean, you guys are making a stab at it. But Kevin is with you guys aren't 4 year, right? You're 2 year.
No, 2 years. Okay. I'm part of the state of Indiana.
So there you're making as big of a step in the right direction as anybody I can see. Yet I see the prices go from on regular schools from, well, in our day, 4 to 70. Now I'm not saying it should still be four. I know it shouldn't still be four. I get that part. But I also know that you would think, Kevin, that there'd be way more nipping around the edges and say, I can get you that kind of education for 25. I'm going to buy one of these old schools here in Chicago and fix the place up a little bit and have some pretty good professors. You can't get accredited. You can't get this. You can't get that. The restrictions on you doing that are like, you know, it's incredible. I mean, matter of fact, I got a bunch of people writing me about these this Israeli firm that supposedly has this cancer cure. And how the hell they would ever? What if somebody actually did come up with a cancer pill that for $5 in 4 weeks you don't have cancer anymore? Would the guy get assassinated or what? I mean, look at the industry around that. I would hope not, but I mean, Kevin, the amount of entrenched stuff is the only place I'm seeing a little bit on the edges. Maybe because it's so horrible, is the medical stuff, which you're very articulate in coming up with. But you know, I don't see any movement in education, do you? I mean, other than guys like you, but then it's a 2-year degree, and I'm not disparaging it. I'm just saying, that person's not getting hired like he went to Harvard, even if he may be as smart as a kid from Harvard. I mean, it's messed up. I mean, I know I'm being a little Daddy Downer here today, but
yeah,
there's
so,
reason.
Yeah, so our pathways are, you know, are people going into 4-year schools or people just, you know, getting different kinds of certificates and industry certifications, frankly. which are valuable in specific areas, like the manufacturing gold is an example. If you have if you're a certified logistics technician or something like that, and that's part of what we do, we get it. Because for us, it's understand that at least from Indiana's point of view, about 60% of the jobs that are going to come available over the next 8 to 10 years require something beyond a high school diploma, but they only half of those, so 60% of the jobs, so 30% of them are going to require a four-year degree. The rest of them are going to require something more advanced than a high school diploma, but that could be an associate's degree, that could be industry certifications. It's things like in the tech world, and Maddie can vouch for this, you may want college degrees, but you really want Cisco certified people who also have certifications in security and in cybersecurity, and those frankly are more important than the degree itself, unless you want to be senior management.
Okay, but I would hope somewhere along the line that somebody would have the capability of actually going and learning something about sociology and economics. I think some of the
that's part of our program. Yeah. If you want that, we got it.
But I don't have my mom used to go take history courses when she was like 81 at St. Xavier's. I want people to go be able to get all this stuff, and I want people to be able to move up, Kevin. And I keep getting it. I should never read that stuff about the Resolution Trust, because as more and more people, as what they used to do to people, say you and I came in and we'll bring Maddie with, and we had enough money to make a bid on two properties, and not five, then they'd set a five property minimum so the right people could get them. And if somebody came in, if we said we borrowed that money too, well, then it'd be a 12 property minimum. And I'm going to say, Kevin, none of those people ever had to work again. They got 15 properties at 20 cents on the buck in 1980. Now, do I want those people to only pay 30% tax and never pay an estate tax? I'm with Elizabeth Warren on this one. I'm sorry, but I don't know. I'm not smart enough to point at the individual person. So I guess I'll drop back and say, since I don't know who the hell they really are, I don't want them paying it. But you know what I'm saying? I could see people I want them to pay more. Just saying.
I know, but I just think the idea of a blanket wealth tax is, ridiculous.
Absolutely agreed.
For several reasons, among them, the notion that. That it's going to do any good.
It's not
going to cover. We have a spending problem.
Is really what
it gets down to. We have a spending problem in government, and so it's not going to do us much good to to have a wealth tax that is arbitrary and frankly is just there to make people feel good, to make people feel like the rich are paying their fair share, whatever that means.
I would agree, and by the way, I'm with you on this. I'm saying sometimes we need to see what the other people are seeing, and some of the stuff they're seeing isn't all that high. By the way, I know you're only a year or two younger than me. Do you remember Illinois having a personal property tax? Because they did, way back.
Yeah, vaguely, and I think if you're going to word this properly, Tom, you're going to say I'm a year or two less old than you.
Yes. Okay. Do you know anything about that? I know my aunt somehow got caught up. They didn't go after everybody. They somehow did a sample. And my aunt, my uncle owned a paint store, and he was a painter. And she worked for an insurance company. And somehow or another, they rented an apartment. They had a car. And somehow they had to pay personal property. And what? I have no idea.
It seems to me that was also in the federal tax code in the Carter years and went away later.
I don't know of anybody who ever got nipped by that. I think it was, they only came after a few people. It was really weird.
By the way, we've gone a little long because you guys were having a good conversation. But before we let Kevin go, we should get a bit of a Super Bowl thought.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Kevin?
Yeah, okay. Patriots last drive of the game.
Wow. I get that sense, too. Yeah. They're 2.5-point favorites right now. They were favored against the Chargers, but for some reason everyone was betting the Chargers, and they blew them out. And then against the Chiefs, they were underdogs, and they win on the road in Kansas City. Betting against them just doesn't seem like a wise move.
Yeah.
Well, I think
we would have said the same thing last week, last year too. So
that's true.
I'm not discounting the possibility that LA will win, but I really think this is Tom Brady's chance. And the real question is, will he ride off into the sunset after it's all done?
I don't think he will. I think he's like a robot. I think he's just going to play until he absolutely can't anymore. I mean,
until his arm looks like Peyton Manning.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Well, even he managed to be halfway decent his last year, just by guile.
Well, not his last year, but the year before that.
Yeah.
When Manning finally, when he had to hang it up, it was because he just couldn't throw an out pattern anymore.
Well, Johnny, you was the same way.
So I think so. It would probably be cool for him to go out on a high note. I don't know. I don't know what he's, what he's really going to do.
Well,
you're right, Matt. It's not like he needs to retire because he's showing so many signs of rust, because he isn't.
No, he's not.
They got the best offensive line, supposedly, they've ever had, and they'll need it, because those two guys in the middle of the Rams' defense, if they can start breaking down the middle, Brady can have a bad day.
Yeah, well, and it's the one thing that Brady's not going to do is get out of the pocket and throw a lot. He can do. He's not a stiff yet, but if they can chase him out of the pocket and make him throw on the run, that's a little bit more of a challenge for him than other quarterbacks. So, for instance, if you flush Trubisky out of the pocket, he can escape it. Whether he can complete a pass on the run is another issue, but he certainly can escape it and run. So, I think if they do get the push up the middle, that'll make it a challenge, and that'll make the game a little more interesting.
I'm still not really sold on his Ram quarterback.
I'm not either, especially in bigger games. I think he's really good when he's at home and he's comfortable, but obviously in a dome, the weather won't be a problem, but a huge game with a lot of pressure, 2 weeks leading up to it, he makes me a little nervous. The Gurley injury, when Gurley's healthy, he's arguably the best running back in the game, or certainly in the conversation, and he's clearly not himself and hasn't been the last few weeks. That is concerning.
Was he supposed to heal over 2 weeks or no?
I don't know. I mean, they thought he was going to be ready for the playoffs because he kind of sat they really minimized his touches the last couple weeks of the regular season, and then he clearly wasn't, to the point where he barely played in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, the other guy's pretty good though too.
Yeah, their backup is good, CJ Anderson. Their defense is really good, but everyone believes that McVay is the best young coach in the game, and then Belichick's the best, probably coach of all time. So that'll be an interesting chess match. It's a fascinating matchup.
Which it should be fun. I think a lot of people would rather have seen the Drew Brees Brady matchup.
Oh yeah, the geezer matchup, sure.
Well, plus they arguably are the two best quarterbacks in the generation. Well, there's a few others that are real good, but what I'm saying, those guys are kind of a special, shall we say. And then, there's people that think Drew Brees should be there, but I don't see how you...
Yeah, there's a class action lawsuit that says he should be there. Both Big Ten quarterbacks,
that
by the way.
Didn't work.
No, well, no. I especially like the idea that you deserve the scalp. I like that part. Kevin, thank you very much, buddy.
All right, you guys.
SP Futures down 575, down on 12. NASDAQ down 46. We're backing up a little bit. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber. SP Futures now down 8, Dow Futures down 32, NASDAQ down 59 as we're coming back here a little bit after two good days. Maddie, Kevin is absolutely correct in the, was a editorial headline here on Bloomberg that resentment of the wealthy is not a policy. And I absolutely agree with that. Yet, I mean, it appalls me. What do you think of this without Kevin here? Like, you know, this is becoming bizarre now. If for all this time, I'm actually starting to trust your opinion. This is.
Thank you.
If I was in the trading pit and I was making, you know, I had my skill set and other people had theirs, and I made, you know, whatever, I had some good years. Say I made $100,000. And some other guy that I knew was a faster trader than me and was willing to take a little more risk, and he made $500,000. I don't believe he should have paid any higher taxes than I did. I don't begrudge him a thing. I congratulate him on being better than me, and I'm fine with that. When Citadel, and I'm not saying he did this personally, and two other people come in and over a period of 15 years – make it so I can't be in the pit, that they're the only person, that they rewrite the rules, that the markets are wider than we ever could have had them. They really, they get out of the way if they can. They turn the machines off if they can, if they have to. Now I got a problem. Am I wrong here or what?
Well, you've already made this point. I thought we kind of addressed it, but I don't think you're wrong. I just don't know how you would institute that type of policy.
I don't either.
So I think it's kind of like pointless.
I agree, but I resent it, the fact that you know, these people make $1 million a day, and I think they make a big portion of it because they don't let anybody else in. Now,
how do they not let anyone else in?
Well, try and become a market maker now. You can't get, they'll give you a feed that's not as good as their feed because they have a enhanced feed right from the exchange. So you'll know that a stock traded a hundredth of a second slower than they will. Every advantage on earth. Or the clearing firm says, guess what? It's $4 million to be a market maker, even though you're going to put up 20 lots. Whatever it is, there's a million. There's no way. No, I'll bet there isn't been an individual market maker that walked over to the CBOE in 10 years.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And I don't know the, but I don't think the tax policy is part of the game. I don't think you should fine people just because you gave them too much. Yet you and I talked over the last 5 years that some of these banks were given so much coming out of 2009. That I think some of the $2 and $3 billion fines they paid were a realization that they had given them too much.
I think they were all cheers and in the boardroom. That was it.
No, I don't think that's the right policy either. Do you make somebody a monopoly and realize they're making more than you thought they would and take some back? I mean, that's no policy. But am I real upset they had to pay it? Probably not. But that wouldn't be a policy that we would design, would it?
No.
I just, you know, I don't know where we're going with this one, but I'm saying before you just take somebody, and even if they don't look like the person you want, be there being some, you know, and maybe they're a little loud and you don't like them or something. Don't think that everything they say doesn't have some shred of, I'll say logic or reason behind it that maybe you should address.
Yeah, I just think that, and I don't know the answer to this. I don't think anyone really does. It's like most issues, it's somewhere in the middle. Kevin mentioned that, you know, it's not a taxing issue or taxing is not going to solve the problem. It's a spending issue. And I think he's partially right, but I don't think that's all of it. Cause I think if we fought about what we're spending on, which we would, and we cut, let's say 20% of our spending, that's not going to solve all of our problem too. It's got to be a mix. And then it's going to be, you know, determining what we can cut. Can we cut defense spending? Can we cut entitlement spending? Can we cut Social Security? All these different programs that cost us a lot of money. You know, some people want to cut some. Some people want to spend more on others, obviously. These are hard questions.
Well, the more you make these
but it's obviously a combination of both. It's not just one or the other. The Democrats just want to tax rich people 70%, 80%, 90%, which, you know, fine by me. I'm not a rich person. What do I care? But it's probably not the right policy.
No, it's not the right policy.
But then not, you know, lowering taxes for the rich and then just cutting welfare spending or something, I don't think that's for the greater good either.
Well, to the extent that you, that's what I mean. I mean, I think you're starting to understand this all comes together. If there's 3,000 less people on a trading floor making a living, not to mention all the clerks and everything else that went with it. Maybe, if they're bright people, a lot of them had kind of a single...
It's not like any of those people live under a bridge. They're all doing something else.
The amount of suicides, the amount of stuff out of that group is dramatic. Right? Because there's a lot of people with a single skill set. Some people have managed to find other jobs and so forth, but I'm gonna bet one-tenth...
Traders I've known over the years, just people in this industry, are some of the more well-rounded, brighter people that can sort of talk about anything.
Those are the ones you know.
Well, that's true, but I would think you could probably put those people in any profession and they'd be okay. But yeah, I'm not... Obviously, you know, that's the people I know.
But what I'm saying is some group of that, because things have been exclusive instead of inclusive, some group of those people have... have fallen onto the 92 million people that are eligible to work that aren't in the workforce. Right? When you have one firm buy another firm and 2,000 people get laid off, maybe, if you're lucky, 1,500 of them find a home somewhere else. But it's not going to be all 2,000. Probably. You'd love it to be, but I'm going to say it probably isn't.
Right.
Maybe some people retire early. But whatever it is, they're now on the three columns of the people in the workforce. Those that are working, those that are unemployed, and those are other. The more people you put in the other column, whether they're just working off their own pension, whether they're working off Social Security, whatever it is, if they're from the state and they drop onto the pension rolls instead of salaried, but you get rid of them at 60 where they maybe could still be working, you're still dropping people into this other area of more and more people got to be, quote, taken care of. And I'm not saying somebody who's saved up some money and is getting a pension, his house paid for it, necessarily is being taken care of, but he's also not working, right? So the more people you put in that column, the more drain you've got on the rest. And if the rest is the average person is making $53,000, the average family, and they're living in Chicago where they're paying basically out the ass in every fee and tax on earth, there's only so much more you can get out of that 53. So the other people in the other column, I mean, I'm not talking about any social issues here. I'm just talking about numbers. If you look on the other column, you look around and say, well, where is the money? It's not fair to go get it from the people who have 1%, but it's also the only place you can get it. I mean,
right?
I mean, I read this article once. I don't know, it was in the Onion or someplace, where they said it was the job of government to take the 1% of the it was 10%. 10% of the population is always going to find a way to steal all the money from the other 90%. I don't necessarily agree with that, but if you take the logic, well, once they do, you're just stagnant, right? You got nothing. So the object of government was, because that's a very vibrant society, is to somehow return a big chunk of that money back to the 90% so the next generation of 10% can steal it all over and stay vibrant. Now, it's not something I would write, but think about it for a second. There's a certain truth to it, right? There's a certain bizarre truth to it. And then, and from the people, you know, firing out on the, from the, I'll say the very liberal wing of the Democratic Party, but somehow or another, these rich people don't deserve everything they got and we ought to take some of it. It's not a truth that I want to see happen, but it's not totally a fiction either, is all I'm saying. And you know, I don't know, you're right, where do we go with that, from that? I don't know. It's not policy, I agree with that, but it's not like it's non-existent either. I mean, what do you think if baseball didn't have an antitrust, we'll go to sports. If baseball did not have an antitrust exemption and it was a free market and anybody could open up another team here in Chicago.
I think they can. There's all kinds of independent leagues and independent teams. There's hundreds.
They have an antitrust exemption to.
I don't think they do.
You know, I don't know how it works for a city. I mean, what would happen if somebody
in Chicago? You've gone to some of the games, for God's sake. There's all kinds of independent leagues and professional teams.
But I don't know what the answer would be if you and I tomorrow, suppose, you know, we win 15 lotteries in a row and say we're gonna make a major league sort of team in six big cities. And I don't know how the exemption would work for that. I honestly don't. We need an antitrust guy.
I don't think they have an antitrust exemption. I think
Major League Baseball has one from Congress.
Well, I mean, I don't know the terms of that, but I think you could absolutely start a league. There's all kinds of leagues. If you, if the St. Paul Saints or whatever, one of those big independent teams that everyone has heard of, decided that they wanted to spend even more money and get bigger and try to compete for major league players, they could do that. There's no law against that.
We'd have to have a huge quiz on Lure Brendan because. Football, even though they will tell you they have this exemption, they do not. When the AFL, I'm trying to say this from memory, when the AFL and the NFL combined, they were given an exemption to market as one. They do not have the overriding, Congress, there's actually a law that says Major League Baseball is a national pastime. So you could actually have a situation where, you sign for the Phillies. Unless the Phillies let you go, the Cubs can't hire you, which in my mind is insane. But you know, that's just me. I mean, as to how it would be if you and I wanted to put actually another stadium a block away from Wrigley, you know, you're right, man. I don't know how they would fight that one. We must have. I wonder if we can get some tweets in on that, because I don't think anybody's ever tried it.
Well, I mean, not next door, but you know, that league that you went to down in Crestwood, that's not far from White Sox Park.
But look,
it's within 10 miles.
Yeah, but look what they have to do. They can't. No other team can back them. Right? They can't play against any of the teams.
Well, yeah, they would be competing against the major leagues.
Well, they can't. They won't. They don't play any of the teams that.
No, they're not going to play in their league, but they would be competing for those dollars and those fans.
Okay, but they should say, I have a team. Why can't I get in the league? Right?
No. What are you talking about?
I'm saying if there was no exemption, they should be able to walk up. I mean,
but the Cubs don't have to agree to play them. They can walk up and say, let's play a game.
My point is if you open a restaurant and you walk up to the Restaurant Depot, which is a place that sells the restaurants, they can't say, we're not letting your restaurant in. Or if there's a Midwest league of teams of A ball players, and you and I form a team A ball players, they can absolutely say, we won't let you in the league. You can't do that in any other place in business.
Yeah, I don't think this is a good. I don't think that's a good comparison.
Well,
I don't think it's a good analogy.
They could say, "I have a team. I want to compete." Well, you can't get in. Why? Because we have an exemption.
You can compete for players, but you're not going to play. It's like that doesn't make any sense.
I'm saying we need to have somebody on who actually can explain this to us.
Yeah, I don't think. I'm not understanding.
I'm saying the Crestwood team can be a pariah and can play other pariahs. And it's as far as anybody's ever gotten against this thing.
But if they spent a bunch of money and they decided they wanted to sign bigger players, and all of a sudden they had a bunch of big players and they said, we want to be in the major leagues, if they had the dough, they could get in.
I think they no, they couldn't. They'd have to have a vote of people.
Well, yeah, they'd have to have a vote of people, okay. Just like any private business.
Name me one other that needs a vote of other owners for you to get in.
It's a private the Major League Baseball is a private entity.
Do you need a vote of all the other accounting firms to start an accounting firm?
You didn't need a vote to start your Crestwood team. You started your team.
Okay, but you can't play anybody.
You can play anybody that agrees to play you. If they don't agree to play you, that's their choice.
Okay, what I'm saying is every other team. We need a lawyer in here. God, I never thought I'd say that. Okay, we come back. We have Mr. John Neal, SP Futures down only one. Now we've come back a little bit. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so.
I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Hello, wild about a wild numbers here. S&P futures now up 175. Dow's up 54. Nasdaq is down 34, mostly because of Amazon. Weekly jobless claims. Wow. 304,000 versus 170, which was expected, 220 last month, but the unemployment rate went up. And the average hourly wages were supposed to go up 0.3%, actually up 0.1%. So let's see. The wages went up less, and yet more people came into work. This is in the midst of a government shutdown. I can't wait for Carl's report. Something is really weird here, isn't it, Manny? Doesn't it seem strange to you?
Seems odd.
But anyway, the number's a big one, but the futures aren't really moving that much on it. They're up a little bit, but we were only down 6. Again, I don't know what to make of it, to be honest with you. December and January numbers always, to me, are kind of the most fluky, but we've got the DAX is down. The DAX is down. 21, make sure I get the DAX here. Danny, what's your traffic weather sports while I'm going crazy here, screen to screen?
I can do that. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there from balmy Chicago this morning. But worst driving conditions of the week by far this morning, probably because everyone's heading back to work after a lot of people worked from home. And a lot of schools reopened today as well, although I think CPS had a scheduled day off today, so still light in the city as far as schools. But we've had all kinds of crashes this morning, especially in northwest Indiana. 8094 has just been a nightmare in both directions. We still have blockage on the eastbound 8094, Indiana side, between Calumet Avenue and Indianapolis Boulevard. It's backed up all the way to the Bishop Ford. Right now, just the two left lanes were blocked, but it was completely closed earlier, so the crews are making some progress on that. But it's a nightmare on 8094 in both directions, just over the Indiana border especially, but it's drifting over on the Illinois side as well. We also had a crash on 8094 near Joliet. That's all clear right now. So just the closer you get to Indiana, and then on the Indiana side, is 8094 becomes a major issue. Earlier crash on the Dan Ryan at 87th is all clear, so that's good news. No issues on I-57 or the Bishop Ford itself. Stevenson, we had an earlier crash, but that's gone. Normal traffic times there. Eisenhower, Traffic really building on I-290 and 88, so keep that in mind, but no accidents to report. Earlier crash on the Kennedy at Nagel is clear, but still some resulting congestion on the Kennedy from those earlier accidents. We do have an issue on I-90 outbound just before Higgins Road. That's right in Rosemont near the airport. That accident's been moved to the left shoulder, but it does cause you to hit the brakes as you're navigating around that. Disabled vehicle right now blocking the right lane on Lakeshore Drive southbound at Foster Avenue on the north side. You'll want to avoid that. Everything else on the expressways is looking okay, but all kinds of travel issues due to that 1 or 2 inches of snow cover that we got overnight and earlier this morning, and then the temperatures warming up. It's causing some slick conditions in the area, so keep that in mind or take the train. Weather today, it's going to feel a lot warmer than it's been, but it's really not that warm. We're going up to a high of 19 with wind chills right around zero today. Right now, it is mostly cloudy and 9 degrees downtown with a wind chill of negative 9. Somehow that feels warm, yet it's still very, very cold and well below normal. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 72. Right now it's overcast and 56. In sports last night, it was a very quiet night. Bulls and Suns were both off. Blackhawks and Coyotes were off as well. We mentioned Arizona State played Arizona in College Hoops rivalry game. It was the Sun Devils beating the Wildcats 95-88. And, of course, the Super Bowl is on Sunday in Atlanta. It'll be the Patriots versus the Rams. Patriots are 2.5-point favorites. Chief.
Is that the longest traffic report ever?
That's a long one.
And you probably skipped some.
I skipped all the stuff that's on the side streets. Otherwise, we could have done the traffic for about 45 minutes.
Dax down 21.2%. FTSE up 8.1%. CAC around down 2. Call that flat. Real slow over in Asia as well. We've got Nikkei up 14. Call that flat. Shanghai up 33. 1.3%. Hang Seng down 11. That's flat. So we've got people from Washington meeting people from China. So we're trying to move forward in that, at least what you get government. Again, big news this morning is Amazon's down about $80. The first print last night after the earnings was up like 50 or 60. In mortal words of your best buddy, Matty Weber, Mr. T, I pity the fool who bought on that print. For God's sake, he's on $140 in 12 hours. That's not good. John, hope you sold on that Amazon print and didn't buy.
No, yeah. I do have a little bit of it, but, definitely, not during that scenario, let's say.
Well, that was crazy, huh?
Relatively good shape.
The earnings come out decent, and then they start talking about how they're overspending on some of their expenses, and they turned that thing around, didn't it?
No, it sure did. I've got a handful of people that have literally a few shares, so.
Well, it's kind of hard to have 1,000 shares of Amazon.
Yeah, well, exactly.
What do you make of the week? We've managed to come very positive with the total, whatever. I think the Fed is throwing in the towel. I don't know what to make of these labor numbers. And neither does the market. I mean, we were down a little bit and we came back to even, and now we're up just a hair. But nothing like you would expect with this kind of a beat. Normally, but somehow or another, I have a feeling Carl's going to get here and say that a lot of the people who somehow were thrown out of work at the federal government did something else and got picked up a little bit on the other side or something like that. It doesn't seem right, does it, that the unemployment rate would be going up at the same time that we get beat by 140,000 people on a number?
No, not at all. Not to me, any of them.
So, but we'll have Carl sort of explain it to us. Sometimes, again, those are two different, just as a precursor. Your establishment numbers, which is the plus 300,000, that's when you call establishments. I mean, you call PTI. Well, you probably wouldn't call PTI, but you call somebody. And I bet they call people that have, like, over 50 people. John, I don't know what their cutoff is, but you call people and they say, how many people you had working this month, how many last month, blah, blah, blah. And what's the definition of work? Is it 2 days a week? 2 days or how many hours? Say somebody's employed. Maybe you've heard Carl say this.
16 hours a week.
Is it that? I mean, I'm not sure what.
I don't know
what the number is to say somebody was employed last week. If they have to work 2 days, 3 days. I don't think it's all. These are a list of questions for Carl. So they're going to get a number that says how many the firms have hired or fired. They're going to get a sample. And there's another group that calls. Well, I don't even know how they do that anymore. Without people not having landlines as much.
I'll say they survey homes in the home survey, and they say how many people in your house are working, how many people do you have in your house, how many people are working, how many were working last week, last month, how do you define working, how many people have two jobs, you know, how much overtime, blah, blah. And then there's that's the household survey. And at the end of the day, the end of the year, the end of the decade, hopefully the amount of people that say they're working equals the amount of people that say they've hired people, right, Jen? But it can wobble back and forth on a monthly basis pretty good, where one survey doesn't agree with the other. Where one
says, absolutely correct.
You know, and the guy who makes sense of it is our man Carl Denninger, and he'll be on hopefully Tuesday, maybe Wednesday. But yeah, that's kind of the drill. And these numbers seem kind of funky to me, Janet, because you would expect that, you know, that your average hourly earnings would be creeping up, and that would entice, you know, if people are hiring more people, they would offer, you would think economically they would be offering more, and the people who are demanding a little more in terms of wages to get the job, all that should be working kind of together. And this month the numbers don't sort of show that. You have a big disappoint in the hourly wages number. At the same time, you have a huge boom in the amount of people working. So anyway, we'll see what happens with those numbers. In January, December, I believe, are the most adjusted too, right, Maddie? Isn't that what Carl always says? Because of the
holidays, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, a lot of funk, but the big number coming after a big bum number last month is pretty darn bullish. So I guarantee you'll hear everybody from the White House on the lawn all day. Ugh. I've been looking forward to that. But so John, what do you make? Hopefully your people that are long have had one hell of a nice month, huh?
Yeah, no. No complaints thus far, and we'll see where it takes us. But yeah, really pretty well washed through that. 10% move down or whatever it was. So.
Well, the people I was talking to, a lot of new people, John. I'm going to say, like we're on Friday, let's say a week ago Tuesday, all they were concerned about is the market going down, and they want protection. And people yesterday, yeah, I don't know, looks to me like we're doing okay. All right, I mean, so it is really amazing when the market's going up, everybody feels pretty good. When it goes down, like, what the hell's going on? But you know, that's the way the world is.
Yeah. Right, and we're always preaching, Tom, is. For a lot of people, they should have seen what can happen, and it did, and then move down could, and, you know, someday will be, you know, probably a worse move and things like that, and there's things you can do to, alleviate that, but, for some people, hopefully that was a lesson, but we'll see.
It still strikes me as how many people in our big time serious money managers, guys, you know, the talking heads, you know, this guy's got a billion under management or 2 billion or whatever. How many people actually believe, or they just tell people, that they have the ability to sense when something bad's going to happen and be able to hedge or pull the trigger in time? I tell you what, if they really are that good, Jan, I they're better than me. I mean, I could never
realize it myself. If they are, I'm stunned.
Yeah, I'm stunned. It seems to me that the timing on this stuff, you know, I don't know why we started selling off in October the day we did. I mean, I thought the market was too high, but I thought it was too high in March. I mean, the idea that you could be, you know, sitting on your desk at the TV desk in New York and all of a sudden in October 5th or whenever it was saying, it looks so hot for me today. I think I'm going to, you know, sell every stack or buy puts on everything. I don't know. If that guy's around, I want to interview him. But we're back to that. Well, we'll know when things get bad. Okay. I don't, especially when it seems like, Janet, every time we have a problem, it's always some debt issue that nobody knew anything about.
All right.
I mean, it's last time, allegedly nobody knew. We have the Comptroller of the Currency, we got the Fed, we got the FDIC, we got everybody in the world looking at banks, and I didn't know. Well, the FDIC had nothing to do with Lehman, but you certainly had NASD. We didn't know these guys had all these Bear Stearns had these other companies that they set up and so on. How do you not know that? I mean, I got to believe the auditors, when they come in here to take a look at PTI Securities, and when they come in, it's fine. They pretty decent people, and they can help you out in a lot of ways. I can't imagine us being able to hide another firm from them, Jen. Not that we would ever want to, but how would we have some double secret firm that sells credit default swaps on Italy, like down the block in another office? I think I'm pretty good with numbers, but tell you what, Matty, it's beyond my pay grade being able to hide that. How do you do that?
Yeah, they're behind the false paneled door and secret knock to get in there.
The double secret knock. It's hard to even imagine something like that, but I guess it does have. Well, what was the tally on Enron? They had something like
It was astronomical, right?
Was it 500? Maybe they had something like, maybe you could Google it. Was it 525 off balance sheet corporations that they put
every time they needed to do something, they just popped in another corporation, right?
Well, it was the I won't say the first, but the first that I know of was the Union Pacific. If you read that, that's the interesting part about reading about the history of railroading. Every dirty trick that you can think of today, those guys had already done by like 1910. Every dirty, it's like not being able to invent a new fetish, John, because somebody's already tried it before.
Right.
I mean, the stuff where the Union Pacific had, everybody put their money in there and they're building track and so forth, and all of a sudden the guys that run the place get the bright idea, why don't we have a track management company that we pay to put the track in? And everybody's like, okay. And they become big parts of the new company. So now you have all the original investors that are paying the new company maybe a little extra for laying the track. So the Union Pacific ends up going bankrupt and the new company makes out like a bandit. But yet now the chairman and all the rest of the people are all parts of the new company and not really other than being employees of the old company. So the old company is now broke and the new company's got all the dough. Well, that is
right.
That's exactly Enron, only 500 times more, and Bear Stearns. We think this one's a real winner, so why don't we throw that money over there? And by the way, I'll be the owner of that one. So it's a interesting world, but I don't really see that type of. Well, of course, I didn't see it before. How would we know? I don't. The debt now that seems to be building up, John, is government. And it's the stuff coming out of the third world in China in regards to dollar and euro denominated debt. And as to how you and I and Matt Weber figure out the day that becomes a problem, if there ever comes that day, how we were able to grab that in our crystal ball, I have no idea. I mean, and really the big numbers of debt is U.S. government. I mean, There's $66 trillion worth of debt in the world. What, we're a third of it? That's a lot.
Huge percentage, Tom.
Yeah.
When you think about it that way.
It's a huge percentage. And, we can't. Isn't it amazing? I mean, I don't know why I'm down on some stuff we do here today, but isn't it amazing how much crap we give other countries for having debt, and yet we've got more than mostly all of them? Except for Japan. Japan's got more than anybody on a per capita basis. But what percentage of society would you think would know that?
Hardly anybody, to be honest with you.
They would say Italy. They would say somebody.
In our business, right?
They'd say Greece. They'd say Italy. But Japan is, leads the league. It's you would think that these are Japan and the U.S. are probably the two, in Germany, but those guys, Germans don't like that much. They're probably the single or the three biggest economies in the world, right? And two of them have debt situations basically out the behind. But how would any of us know the day the U.S. says, you know what, we can't do it anymore. We gotta goose these taxes to the point where you strangle everybody. I mean, it becomes a point where you can't borrow anymore. And I hope that day never comes. But the reason what makes it weird, John, is, am I wrong, Matty? It's happening in the city as we speak. right? Every couple of months, there's something goes up. So the city has got to that point where they can't get any further. They absolutely have to start just raising taxes, fees, and everything. And they've been doing it really for about 7-8 years. And people keep thinking that it's not going to happen, yet it continues to happen. The entire South Side, John, the taxes down there are dramatic. I mean, they're going higher and higher and higher. And to the point where, I mean, we're talking about properties that, now, you know, to a certain extent, well, I'm not going to say the schools are equal. They're not. But, you know, poor people's kids go to school sort of, they're not the same kind of schools, but if things were done properly, it would cost about as much to educate somebody in a poor neighborhood as a rich neighborhood, right? So there's some equality there, but I'm going to say that some of the taxes, I mean, one of the houses that I know, one of my friends has, it's $165,000 maybe is the worth of the place. What do you think the taxes are, Manny?
I have no idea.
$7,600? That's a lot.
It seems like a lot for that yeah. house, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, it's definitely something you have to look at and say, wow, it's, what's that, $700 a month? Close to it? It's a lot of dough. Especially if you don't have any kids around, if your kids, but at least in the burbs, you know, your kids probably can go to public school. Not that they can't in the city, but the burbs are probably more likely to. I mean, these are, you start looking at this stuff and, you see where this all this money. How does the taxes break down where you are, Jen? I mean, here it's, where there's massive amounts of fees everywhere, and the property taxes are big, and the state income tax is really small compared to other states. We're still, what, 3%, right, man? You're 3.2 or something? Are we 3? I think we're 3, right? Illinois, but they want to go to 5? They were at 5, and they came back down. Anyway, well, how is it in Arizona, John? Are the property taxes that huge or what?
I love how you're asking me about property taxes when I don't own any property.
Well, no, I was asking you about
what you're talking about.
I was asking about state sales tax. State income tax. We're 3, right?
That sounds right, yeah.
We went to 5, and then we came back. When Renner got in, then we go for 5 for a while, and then we came back to 3 or 3.2 or something like that. Anyway, we're in that range, so we're not a heavily income tax state, John, but we're murdering people on property taxes and sales taxes and everything else. You know, try and sell your house; it's 1.5%, that kind of thing.
Illinois right now is 4.95.
Really? Is that for the high end or for
it was 3.75? And then beginning in July 1, 2017, it went up to 4.95.
For how much and over for the whole mess?
I don't know. Starting from $1? I'd have to dig in.
That's starting from $1? Wow. Okay, well, I was wrong. All right, Jan, what's it like?
It seems to me that our property taxes are about a third of what you have there, Tom. State tax isn't real heavy here. But I do find that there's it's almost frustrating. There's like I don't know if you have this here, but another add-on is like you have to have a license or a yearly fee for almost anything, whether it be to have there's a sign fee if you have a sign outside an establishment. It seems like there's like a fee for just that and just about anything you come up with.
Men's room fee?
Well, I don't know about that, but there could be because I don't run a public restroom, so but there could be.
You know, it's interesting is every state finds a way to get you. You know, Manny, I found one of the highest tax state if you include everything, and this will be one of your last choices. So make it your first. A state that everybody will say they flee to for no taxes.
Texas,
Wyoming.
Oh, Wyoming.
They have an incredible state death tax.
Who would
tax.
Flee to Wyoming?
Well, because I don't think they have an income tax.
Great skiing, but
yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people
very cold.
I'll give you a little example of what's going on here. The PTI. This is several years ago in Arizona. Here we moved from the little suburb of Phoenix from Glendale. To Peoria, in the city of Glendale, in just this little, office, the fire marshal came in, and I forget how much they charged a year to inspect the office to make sure it was safe, okay? It was funny, once the office moved to Peoria, it was right on the borderline there. Fire marshal comes in that year to, you know, get their check and said, well, we're in Peoria now. And he said, okay, see you later, and left. You know, so I mean, there's just for this fire marshal to go through and, you know, check. I don't know what they checked, but it's just little things like that, though.
Yeah, but I was surprised. So obviously the trick, if you move to Wyoming, is to leave your assets somehow in another state, because they have a huge estate tax.
All right.
So if you're some rich dude and built some huge place out in Wyoming, they're going to nail you when you croak, even though you're fat and happy when you're alive. I mean, every state has got their little hook in you, and some of them you would think that are, and you have to wonder, how efficient are they? I mean, some states seem to deliver a lot. One of my Dr. Johnson calls in once in a while, or my psychologist buddy, and he lives right on the border from Dartmouth. He lives near Dartmouth. He's right on the border of Vermont and New Hampshire. He said for years, I don't know, Ben, do you remember which one was which? One of the states had huge taxes for their education. You know, the best soccer fields, the best this, that. Every locker room was tiled with the best crap, the usual stuff. And
either of those states.
Well, but the other state, totally different. Very, very Spartan. I mean, your locker rooms were concrete, community shower, whatever. It was just enough to deliver an education. Massive difference in the cost per student. And he actually said that the difference in terms of academics, they're virtually exactly the same. That there was almost no difference. The teachers were just as good in one as they were in the other, even though, you know, the room was not as nice, and there was almost no difference. So you wonder, you know, what exactly are you paying for in a lot of these areas? And these are hard questions when everybody's broke. I mean, if the best we can do on a month where there's 304,000 people going to work is they have the hourly wage go up 0.01%. So you multiply that by 12, where are you, John? 1.2% for the year? I don't think that cuts it in today's world of inflation and increasing taxes and stuff.
Yeah, so, I think other things have went up a lot more than that, correct.
All right, John, we got 1 minute. We've a big sell-off last quarter, huge January to the upside. Now what?
Right.
Now what? Now what do we do?
Well, I think, we keep hedging the things that we're involved in, Tom. I'm looking for, opportunities and, always for my fixed income people or even some other areas to, adjust where I want to be in these markets. I've got, no new definitive, sectors or areas right now, but, I've always got my eyes open and, always trying to protect the...
I'm going to talk to you and Dan because all of a sudden a few of my guys are starting to ask what's available in the fixed income area. You guys are on that way more than I am. I don't know if it's a place where we want to start flying everybody now, but it's probably there's enough going on there. We find something decent, we can at least put a toe in somewhere for some people that it's appropriate for. But it's not zero anymore. They're something. But again, you guys are more adept at that than I am. What do you think today, John?
I think we'll meander up today a bit.
We will too.
Finish out the week.
Right now, we got SP Futures up 250 and on the heels of this big employment report. Thank you, John. Thank you, Maddie. Back on Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.